This is the best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
But the news of the day is not from baseball. It's not even from football. Well, yesterday we had Sam Darnold signing and agreeing to terms and coming out to practice while we were on air. Today, it's about the NBA. The NBA, for the first time ever in the history of major professional sports, has a betting sponsor. They have a betting sponsor. Now, look, this is, and I got a chance to meet with our sales staff at iHeartRadio. You can download the iHeartRadio app, listen to our show wherever you go yesterday. And one of the great things about sales is they can sell anything. The NBA has become the first U.S. sports league to sign an official betting sponsor. Who knew? Who knew that was something you could... Today, Adam Silver announced that the league struck a deal with MGM that will give the gaming company rights to use the league's highlights, names, logos, and direct data feed, as well as exclusivity marketing itself as the official gaming partner of the NBA and the WNBA. I've often said, you know you have a gambling problem if you're betting on the WNBA. Industry sources peg the deal to be 3 years and at least $25 million. Wow. It is not known if the NBA receives a, quote, integrity fee that gives the league a percentage of the amount wagered on NBA games and events. The league was looking for a 20% to 0.20% to 1% cut based on the total bets made on NBA to compensate for an increased compliance costs. The NBA believes will arise from expanded legal sports betting in the U.S. The integrity fee is strongly opposed by the American Gaming Association, whose position is that it unfairly taxes operators whose margins are already razor thin. In other words, an integrity fee is the VIG. And Adam Silver's like, hey, listen, you guys can collect the bets. We want to collect the VIG to protect the integrity of the game. People have been betting on sports for a long time. They've been betting on basketball for a long time. They've been betting on basketball legally in Las Vegas for a long time. But with the recent Supreme Court ruling, which allows states to rule themselves and to set their own betting laws, MGM, which is in several different states around the country, Nevada, Maryland, Mississippi, Jersey, and Massachusetts is going to open books next week. New York as well. MGM owns properties there. Now they're going to collect bets on NBA games legally like they would, and now they can be the official gaming sponsor. I don't know what the true value is to saying you're an official gaming sponsor. I do know that what this is doing is eliminating a taboo from our childhood. And I continue to tell you that there is a downside. This is like marijuana being decriminalized and then legalized. And what's amazing about it is, like on one hand, marijuana and THC and CBD, you know, if properly used, like these drugs are less harmful in many ways than legal drugs like alcohol, than prescription drugs, which people become addicted to if you're using it to manage pain. Like, there is a lot of good. On the other hand, once you make something totally legal and you collect taxes on it, and so you fund, you know, schools and other budgets that are out of whack, like, we can't stop you from waking bacon every day. And if you can do it as an adult, what's the message we send to kids? Like, it is hard. The same is true with gambling. When I go to Las Vegas, I only go to the sports book. We've talked about this before. I don't really know how to play craps, although I've played craps. It's the most fun. It seems like the most fun place. And it seems like somebody's always winning at the craps table, even though I know that's not true. Right? It's just loud and people having a good time. And there's always a guy with a nice looking jacket. It's got a nice looking woman. And they're, you know, and somebody's blowing on the dice. And it looks like a good time, but I don't really know what I'm doing there. So I stick to blackjack a little bit. But blackjack can go good or bad in a theme. Whereas I feel like I get more bang for my buck when I put $20 down in a game or on a parlay, right? Then I get to watch three or four games. My entertainment value goes way, way up. So I'm not going to sit here and be some curmudgeon and say I don't bet. But once you start having the official betting sponsor of the NBA, you're telling everybody, you know what, this is the way it's going. We're good with it. We embrace it. Which is, it's the reality of the way, of the time in which we're living. But if you've ever met somebody that's got a gambling problem, and maybe this, maybe what you're telling us is, the reality is, if you have a gambling problem, this wasn't going to change things. If you have a gambling problem, if you had that gambling addiction, you had the gambling bug, legalizing sports betting isn't going to change anything. And that, to which that, you're probably right. But this is a seminal moment in professional sports. In many ways, long overdue, right? The folks in Vegas, they do know how to handle this stuff. They do know how to monitor betting. They do so they know if there's a spike in a game that something's not on the up and up. Like Vegas, these people are professionals. They went legit a long time ago. A long time ago. Because otherwise, the city would cease to exist. So half of me loves this. Half of me knows that Vegas is getting the Raiders. Vegas is getting a ridiculous stadium. Vegas is going to get NCAA events. Vegas eventually should get a Super Bowl, which is the perfect Super Bowl city. And it should get a Final Four because it's the perfect Final Four city. And that's great. And people have been betting for a long time, and this takes the taboo away from sports betting. You know, it's like, look, you're going to legalize some and not legalize the other. You know, you already had lottery tickets, which is, the odds are terrible. Plus, there's no real entertainment value in it. Now I get to watch a game and got a little money on it, and I didn't have to call some guy. Like we're trying to eliminate the black market, which is smart. But I'm fascinated. You know what I'm fascinated by? I'm always fascinated by the law of unintended consequences. I think the intention here by the NBA is a good one. Hey, look, people are already betting on games. It's going to be legal nationally. Let's link up with MGM. Huge name, respectable name. Let's collect some money per year. And by the way, if we can charge an integrity fee, make some money on top of that to make sure that our players are impervious to this sort of thing. Like, look, our guys make so much money. You know? That's the idea. But are there unintended consequences that we're not paying attention to? You know, do we open up players to be blackmailed for things in their personal lives that they don't want to become public? Do we? How do we do this? And oh yeah, by the way, if you're MGM, are you really going to see value in that type of sponsorship? Maybe that's not anybody's worry other than MGM. But mark this down. July 31st, 2018, seminal moment, Professional Sports League links arm in arm with a major gambling company. And the NBA could interact in a gambling space, which, I mean, you want to talk about a great way to, I've often said this about baseball. Look, if you're going to go in, go all in. Give me an adult gambling section in a Major League Baseball game where only if I go to the site of the game, I can get an iPad, I can run my card and charge up my thing for $200, and I can bet on whatever I want to bet on. Next pitch, will Albert Pujols ground out here or will he get a hit? You know, will he get a walk? What'll happen this inning? What'll happen with this pitch? What'll happen with whatever? It makes the mundane of regular season action incredibly thrilling. Anybody who's had money on a game has experienced this. If this shot goes in, I win. If it doesn't, I don't. Crazy as it sounds. But I do think there's some unintended consequences we may not be paying attention to.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I want to play for you a little bit of what LeBron James said last night. He had a sit-down interview with Rachel Nichols. And there's a couple points that he said about this year's Lakers team that I think perked up some people's attention. This is LeBron on how he's trying to build championship habits within the Lakers team.
We don't have any right now, but we definitely want to be better than we were the previous year. And we want to you know, have championship, you know, you guys know me. When it comes to championship habits, that doesn't mean you can bring it in a championship, but that means you practice excellence every day. And I expect that from not only myself, but from my teammates. That's what Genie, that's what Magic, that's what Rob will want, that's what Luke is going to want, and we shouldn't sell ourselves short of that.
I plan and I train and I set my mind every single day to play for championships. And Magic and Genie and Rob, and they believe the same thing, and that's what their goal is too. So when you're around people who have the same goal in mind, then you can live with the results.
Wow, how about that? How about that? Yeah, look, it's about a championship mentality. There's a couple of things that go counter to that. Now, I think LeBron James works on his body as well as any NBA player maybe ever has. I think LeBron James works on his game at a very high level. I'm not going to say higher than anybody else, because there have been times in which there have been holes in his game, although he steadily improved his shooting. He's always been an adept passer. His ball handling's gotten better as well. But LeBron doesn't practice. It's really hard to establish championship habits within a team if you don't practice. So missing within this conversation by Rachel Nichols, which was a really good conversation. There was some politics that were discussed. There was the amazing project that was completed and opened yesterday, the school, the I Promise School. But there was no discussion or question about whether or not he's going to practice this year. I would expect him to practice. He said it's not going to be a rebuilding year, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a championship year. Now, I don't know what you consider a rebuilding year, but usually a rebuilding year is when you take a step back. Will he personally take a rebuilding year? I guess maybe. Here's the push and pull to it, okay? I'll give you LeBron James is great. I give you LeBron James has consistently been one of the top couple players in the NBA over the last decade. Has he been the best player every year? The answer is no, he hasn't. His best has been as good or anybody. He has had years to which he's the best. But remember, we're talking about last 15 years. We're talking about, you know, there was a year when Dirk won the MVP. He was incredible. Dirk was never the defender, never the passer, but an incredible, incredible scorer. You had Tim Duncan. You had probably at the end of the Jason Kidd run, I probably wouldn't put him in that mix. You had Kobe and some of Kobe's great years before he started to fade because of injury and because of age. Even now, Harden, Westbrook, KD, and you have kind of the new group. Steph Curry had the year where he's an unanimous MVP. I've always thought LeBron James is a more valuable player, but Steph Curry had a better year the year they won 73, and he was the unanimous MVP. Kevin Durant was better than LeBron James, by my estimation, in the past two NBA finals. He just was. And 2 years ago, LeBron had to guard him. It didn't work out well for LeBron, especially in the second half. Part of that was the construction of the team, too much weight put on his shoulders. Part of it was KD was just awesome. Awesome. Can't guard him with one guy. So I'll give you that he's an incredible player, a top five all time. Some people believe he's the best player of all time. I'm still a Jordan guy. And truthfully, in their prime, I would take Magic and Bird. I would, even though there are things that he does that Magic and Bird never did. There are things that they did he hasn't done. But the idea that because he's been to the NBA Finals so many times, like, look, the Eastern Conference has been the inferior conference. It's been inarguable. And the perfect example of that is if you took this exact same roster and you stripped you said the Lakers are going to play in the East this year, I'd say they're probably the third best in the East, and they would play against the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. They'd probably be the second best in the East, but people would say, all right, you got the Raptors, they won all those games. But that's it. It's the Celtics would have a better roster, the Celtics are the better team, and then there's the Lakers. In the West, Houston, Golden State, obviously, and probably Oklahoma City. I think anywhere between fourth and sixth is about reasonable expectations. It's really reasonable expectations. And though it's not a rebuilding year for the Lakers because they didn't make the playoffs, won 35 games, and if they can win 50 games this year after 35 last year, that's a building year. That's an improved year. That's a year to which things start to come together and they start to figure what out what's what and see what they do in the playoffs. But that's personally got to be a rebuilding year, right? So maybe we're arguing semantics, but the challenge for LeBron is going to be, look, last year he showed he can play 82 games and still have juice in the playoffs. Can he play 82 or close to practice and still have it left to play in the playoffs? It's a hard thing. I think he's a very smart guy. I think he knows his body incredibly well. That's one reason he's never been hurt. I think he knows when to go hard and when to take his foot off the pedal. There's times in which he doesn't guard people anymore. So it's going to be a challenge to get him to guard more often, to get him to practice more often, to get him to continue to play as close to 82 games as possible. And I was asked earlier today on First Things First how long I thought he'd have prime LeBron. I thought three, but probably in the 2 years. I think he's going to slow down. He's not going to have, and he probably needs to start playing at a little bit lighter weight. But the one thing about basketball, and soccer has a little bit of this, football at quarterback has a little bit of this, or even you look at Larry Fitzgerald as a wide receiver. You can evolve. You can adjust. You have to be willing to do so. And I think LeBron has always shown the willingness to allow other guys to play. So I think it's a fascinating thing. But he didn't say they expect a championship. He said they expect championship habits. Championship habits include practicing. We'll see if he has those.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
The story, though, is the Houston Cougars. Of course, they're coached by Major Applewhite. There are massive expectations this year, as there have been in previous years. Last year, a couple of unbelievable games in which they lost a close one to Texas Tech in a shootout, a close one to Memphis, and a close one in the bowl game in the Hawaii Bowl to Fresno State. Their head coach is Major Applewhite. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Major, how are you?
I'm doing great, Doug. How are you doing?
Good, man. Football is back, and I know this is a 365, 24/7 deal for you. But kind of as we get, tomorrow's August. You play a football game in August against Rice. I think that's August against Rice. Give me your feelings right now about your team as we're less than really a true month out from seeing you play football.
Well, I hate to bore you with the typical coach speak, but our whole focus on this fall camp is development of our team. That's where our mindset is. We've got great players on the offense, defensive side. Guys have had a tremendous spring. With some new scheme on offense, two new coaches in the secondary on defense. They've had a tremendous summer workout program, and now it's time to just develop as a team, as a unit, offense, defense, special teams, as players, and then at some point we'll shift the focus and we'll focus on Rice the first game of the year.
Okay, one of the things that you guys have done, which is it's a trend in basketball, which has become a trend in football, is take a bunch of grad transfers, and you got some high level grad transfers. You have guys that have already been coached, but they've been coached in different schemes by different people. What's that like in trying to understand what you're going to have when you take grad transfers like a Terrence Williams, like a Raylon Singleton, like a Nick Watkins? How have you gone about getting to know these guys and getting them up to speed on how you guys want to play in such short order?
Well, there's a lot of things that go into it, but number one, all of these kids are from the state of Texas. So Raylon Singleton's from Crosby. Nick Watkins is from Dallas. Quentin Dormady is from Bernie, Texas. Terrence Williams is from Ennis. So you already know a lot about these kids through the first time around recruiting. So they're not just, hired guns that you know nothing about.
Right.
So they have a foundation of Texas high school football. It's a very recruited state. We know them through our staff. The second thing is you got to make sure they fit into your culture, that they're not going to be, oil and water. I mean, they've got to be able to mix and be able to fit in. And then lastly, you want to go out and find guys that have produced. And whether it's been Nick starting 9 games last year at Notre Dame, whether it's been Raylon being a a starter and a contributor at Utah, whether it's Quentin Dorman, you have his staffs in the SEC, or Terrence Williams running for 1,500 yards as a sophomore at Baylor. All these guys have done a tremendous job where they've been. It's not uncommon that these kids get their degrees early and they finish and they want to come back to the great state of Texas and develop their professional careers, but they also got a little bit of football left in them and they want to finish out their career the right way. So there's a lot of things that go into it. Those are just kind of the three, and then obviously you got to have needs in certain positions.
Ed Oliver, he's an incredible defensive tackle, and as you said, you're rebuilding the coaching staff and your defensive backfield as well. But I mean, so good that you guys are building a Heisman Trophy campaign around him. I feel like an old fart now because I was in college when Charles Woodson won the Heisman Trophy as a defensive player. But as a former quarterback, are you going through the motions with this thing because you think the world of the kid, or do you think it's actual possibility he could win the thing?
I don't put anything past anybody, you know, in terms of these awards, and I've seen seasons and things take different turns, and you know, Ed's a guy who's certainly worthy of being in the conversation, you know, past results, you know, future indicator, probably not going to a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman, if we're all honest, but he's a rare player. If he continues to, you know, keep his act together and play at that high level, and we do well as a team around him, you know, I've seen guys have that opportunity. We were coming off of a 4-7 season when Ricky Williams won the Heisman in 1998, but it coincided with not only a great player with great stats, but a team that was winning, a team that was under first-year head coach Mike Brown, and there was a lot of buzz around that team, and it was able to stay on SportsCenter and highlight shows, and writers on the West Coast would stay up to watch this guy run the ball. So there's a lot of things that go into it. You know, as long as he continues to play at a great level, I think that'll be the first to tell you, just let the play speak for itself. But, you know, you've got to do all that stuff as a school, the sports information department, and a football team. So, you know, we welcome any kind of individual awards, but obviously all our focus is on the team awards.
Major Applewhite, head coach of the Houston Cougars, joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. How many times have you gone into a kid's house, or you've gone and recruit a kid now, where it's the son of somebody you played against? That's you're getting to that point to where, like, now I coach AAU basketball. I'm like, wait, his kid's in college already? You know, like, Trey Young, of course, is the son of Rafer Young, who I played against. He played at Tech. How many times has that happened to you?
Well, I mean, we all know, well, I say we all know, I know him because I played with him, but Casey Hampton, he was a 13-year pro for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he went to six, seven Pro Bowls, Super Bowl champ. He was at our camp with his senior son this year. And I'm thinking, we used to hang out in the dorm and play Madden and eat pizza together, and now I'm recruiting your senior son? You know, so it's happening. It's not a bad thing. And it's really good, actually. I mean, you have a lot of familiarity as you get older with the parents. I think when you're in your 20s and your 30s, you're trying to relate to what it is to be a parent, what it is to have kids. And now that you have your own children, and some of these parents went to school, high school, college, the same age, I think it helps in creating relationships, having something in common.
What look, this has been a wild ride for you, right? You know, taking over before the bowl game, going back a couple years ago. Last year, you know, by Houston standards, I mean, it's a program that's won 9, 10, 11 games. A little bit disappointing. And this year, obviously, people think you're loaded for bear. What have you learned? And, you know, now that you've had over a year on the job, like, what do you know now that you didn't know previously?
A lot. I mean, it's hard to put a tally on it, but there's just a lot of things that you're more in tune to as a head coach versus an offensive coordinator. You're worried about, you know, your 40 or so players on your side of the ball, your five quarterbacks, how they're doing academically. Now you're worried about how is academics in general. You know, I'm worried about getting Greg Ward's shoulder back so he can play at Hibbert Stadium on a Friday night. Now I'm worried about everybody's shoulder.
Right.
So it's just a different scope, but it's something that you enjoy. And as a head coach, you can see where your decisions help benefit players and staff members more so than if you're in a position role. So you take great pride in that. You know, you wake up every morning and understand that everybody underneath your watch has hopes and dreams. And your job is to work your butt off and give them all the resources that they need and the encouragement when they need it, and kind of the, you know, kick in the rear when they need it. And that's the fun part about being head coaches. You see everybody from a bird's eye view, and you have appreciation for what they do. You don't always see that as a position coach. You don't always see how much pride that head trainer has in his training room, or how much pride that strength coach has in his weight room, or how much pride the equipment manager has in his, you know, locker room. So those are things that you get to see as a head coach.
You know, it's kind of interesting, your guys' schedule. You got Rice first, you know, a program that obviously you guys have dominated in the city of Houston. Then you go take on Arizona, coached by a former Houston head coach, right, in Kevin Sumlin. And then you go take on Tech, and they're coached by Cliff, who, of course, used to coach at UH as well. Like, it's like going and playing family, kind of, your second and third game before you get into league play.
Yeah, I mean, that's Texas in general. You know, it really is. I mean, everybody's within 2 degrees of separation in that state in terms of the coaching world. So it's not uncommon. You know, I know those are storylines and things that create interest and entertainment value around the games, but I'm not going to be playing Cliff or Kevin. Hopefully none of us are out there playing, or people will be thoroughly disappointed. But, you know, at the end of the day, I get it. We all get the entertainment value of it, but it's going to be the guys that are out there and home playing the game and all that kind of stuff.
You guys kind of have created a little bit of a monster, though, right? Like, the success at Houston has brought attention not just to your program and obviously the facilities being upgraded, but I think it's raised the level of other teams in the league. Is that fair, right? That the success at UH has brought a higher level of football overall to the conference? Is that a crazy statement?
No, I don't think it's crazy. I think, you know, we had a great year. We had a great year in 15. We underachieved in 16. We underachieved in 17. I mean, just being point blank honest. The thing I've always recognized is being from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, growing up just 4 hours from Houston, playing and coaching in the state. Houston's always been powerful. It's always been powerful. I mean, the alumni, the coaches, whether it's Bill Yeoman, Kevin Sumlin, Art Briles, whether it's Leroy Burrell, Carl Lewis, Clyde Drexler, Akeem Olajuwon, Freddie Couples, you know, Andre Ware. Just because we're in a different conference doesn't mean that we're not who we are. It's a very influential, very powerful city, great university. Dr. Tours worked her tail off to raise the academic standards of our campus and our school. I think there's a lot of people that have contributed to being respected as a conference, whether it's us, Central Florida, South Florida, Memphis, going on our own Navy, that you can name them all. It's a very competitive league, but you know, I don't think that there's been a real big burst in terms of our football program. I've always been proud of my program, and our program's always been a program that can win, and it's had great tradition in it. And it's not to be contrarian, but it's not kind of a Johnny-come-lately deal. This is something that's been going on for quite some time at our school, and so we're very proud of our tradition. We just got to keep doing our job and carry it on.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're being contrarian. I think though that the national attention, I also think that allows other teams in the league to recruit Texas a little bit more, and it stepped up kind of their level of recruit. I do find it yeah. Fascinating though that the league has gotten better than I think the perception of it was going back a couple years ago. All right, you mentioned changing some offensively. How so?
Well, you know, Coach Briles, Kendall, you know, our offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, and Randy Clements, our run game coordinator. Obviously, they've worked together for a while, created some explosive offenses together at Baylor. Kendall then took it to Florida Atlantic and did that for Coach Kiffin last year. The continuity between the two, the relationship, they're bold. You know, they're a lot of courage. They attack. They're not emotional, but they're very bold and courageous in what they try to do offensively with the tempo and the aggressiveness of going downfield. But they still hang their hat on the test of time principles in terms of ball security, being able to run the football, having a physical mentality in what you're doing. So I saw our team take to that in spring. I saw our quarterback develop. I saw younger wide receivers who hadn't got an opportunity to play as much step up in those roles. So I'm just looking forward to the next 25 days starting Friday, in which we get to develop and get better as a football team. But coming out of spring, just and you know, a lot of that has been made about the offense. Everybody wants to talk about offense. But same thing on the defensive side of the ball. With Coach Morgan and the safeties and Coach Williams in the corner, a lot of experience, a lot of continuity in the staff. Just ready to build on it, quite honestly. It's hard watching a bunch of exercises in May, June, and July. It's time to put a ball down and watch guys play.
No question about it. Last thing in regards to that offense, you know, Art Briles, Kendall's dad, that offense was always described to me as hey, you know, it's really the veer from shotgun, right? Like, that's kind of what the scheme is inside the tackles. It's a veer, and the only difference is now you're out in shotgun, and then you also have the ability with RPOs. Is that a good way, a layman's way of explaining it to those of us who aren't in the field room, who don't understand the schematics of it?
I think that's a part of it, Doug. Honestly, I think that's a part of it. You know, there's some, triple option type principles from the zone run game. The quarterback can be involved in it, like old school triple option. There's the RPOs portion of it. There's obviously the tempo, the spread nature of it. It's hard to kind of coin just an offense in one or two sentences. The thing that I really was intrigued about, other than just how explosive they were and how great players they've had, the splits and the tempo and all that, is how they've been able to do that with different people. Whether it's been a Heisman and RG3, whether it's been Nick Florence, who people have to Google who that is now, but a highly accomplished, productive quarterback at Baylor. Whether you have no quarterbacks and you've got to play a bowl game against a team with no quarterbacks and you line up six different guys at quarterback but still find a way to run for over 450 yards in the game. Just innovativeness, creativity, things you have to do as you're building a roster, and we're still trying to build a roster from a lot of attrition. Coaching turnover does that. So these are this type of experience, type of continuity, and the type of creativity you need to put points on the board. And I've seen the relationships, the positivity, the confidence that they're building guys, and you're happy with who you've hired.
Well, listen, I can't wait to see your team play against Rice and upcoming in a month. I know you want to get out there and get after it at practice. We appreciate you joining us, and thanks for letting us know a little bit about Ed and this campaign. It's going to be fascinating to watch his progression.
Absolutely, Doug. I appreciate you having me on the show. Go Cougs.